We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Welcome back to Inside the Clubhouse. I'm Ryan McGuffey alongside Bruce Levine, and we are going back to the hotline where all guests appear on the Score hotline, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, where, Bruce, we are pleased to have another fine guest from the south side of town.
We indeed do. We welcome the manager of the Chicago White Sox, Grady Sizemore, to Inside the Clubhouse. Grady, thanks for taking some time out. I know it's not the ideal day to be joining us, but you've been a professional and a gentleman all the way through. Much appreciated. Welcome to the show today.
I appreciate it. Happy to be here.
Wonder if you could talk a little bit about the elephant in the room. Just let's move on as quickly as we can from dealing with the fact that you've had to deal with this record thing since you took over for Pedro Grifol, and talking about the record and your players have had to because of the fact that it just is what it is. What can you say about having already done that and not having to talk about it the next few days for you and your team?
Like you said, there's no secret that this hasn't been the year that we wanted. And when you're setting records for losses, you know, I think everyone, you know, feels that pain and that frustration. So, you know, including, you know, just everyone from the, you know, in the clubhouse to the staff, to the fans, everybody, you know. So it's not, you know, the season we wanted. It's not the place we want to be. And it's not just the style of baseball we want to play. You know, but all we can do is learn from that and grow as a team. And like you said, I think, you know, aside from the wins and losses, I think this team has improved over the last, you know, couple months and has shown, we've seen a lot of these young guys kind of step up and get experience and build for the future. So, you know, it's just one, you know, moment, you know, of many. I think that, you know, when we come into next year, guys are going to be, you know, hungry to kind of, you know, put that behind them and, you know, just start fresh and, you know, just build off of, you know, kind of what we've started here in these last couple of weeks and really be hungry just to kind of put that behind us and, you know, get better and just improve off of everything that we've, you know, tried to accomplish here. And, you know, like I said, we have a lot of young guys. There's a lot of promise, you know, with these young players. We have a good pitching staff that has really come together here and shown what they can do. You know, the bullpens look better. You know, and we're getting some young position players that are getting the experience they need, and we're going to see, we're going to evaluate, you know, after this year and see what we have. But I really like at least the core group of guys we got. And I think that, you know, there's a lot to play for, you know, next year. And I think everyone's going to just be hungry to kind of put this year behind us and get back on the right side of things.
Grady, you've obviously been in what's considered a good clubhouse and maybe a bad clubhouse. And, you know, Bruce and I have been in and out of the White Sox clubhouses for the last couple of decades. And, you know, I was in those clubhouses in 2021, 22, 23. And I go in the clubhouse this year, and it's different. It is different, regardless of the number of losses, whether it's a losing streak, talking about the record, not the record. This group has seemed different. And, you know, fans might not want to hear good clubhouse because it doesn't equate to a record, but how has a strong clubhouse group been able to navigate a season like this, and how has that helped you in your position as manager?
It definitely makes it easier. I think, like you said, obviously fans don't want to hear it, but, you know, I think for us being in there every day and having this positive environment where, you know, guys aren't sour, they're not bitter, they're not pointing the finger, they're not negative, where we can get to the point where we're happy to come to the field every day, we're happy to put the work in, and we're trying to get better. And it's, you know, I know it's a lot of losses, but, you know, if you look around, you know, the whole season as a whole, it wasn't, you know, like we were just getting blown out every night. You know, I think we were very competitive in a lot of these games, and we're just a few plays away, a few pieces away from turning that around. You know, you look at just, you know, a lot of just tough losses and close games. And that can happen sometimes. You just get bad luck and, you know, you're just a player too short. The ball doesn't break your way. It just seemed like it was one of those years where nothing was going our way. you know, regardless of how good or bad we played. You know, I think everyone acknowledges the fact that we have to get better and that, you know, we're not putting, you know, this wasn't the year we wanted and we have to play better. We have to just, you know, grow from this, learn from this. But, you know, the guys handled it like professionals. You know, they came in ready to work every day. They stayed together. You know, they didn't start turning on each other or pointing fingers. They just acted like pros. You know, they're real mature about it, and that's a credit to them. I think that will help them next year, you know, having gone through this and having stayed together. That'll help those guys, you know, be stronger and turn this thing around.
Being a part of the organization, being a part of the future is guaranteed for you if that's what you want to do. You have a job for next year. Chris Getz and his people have already pointed to you being an important factor moving forward, including now. But have you been able to even think about the fact that whether you're the manager or not, you're going to want to continue to be with the White Sox and their pursuit of future excellence?
You know, I'm committed to the team and to the guys. So in that sense, yeah, I haven't really thought about it, but I haven't thought that I'm, you know, walking away from anything. I love the opportunity that I've been given here, and I really enjoyed just my time with, you know, everyone from the staff to the players to the front office. So, you know, I want to, you know, I have a, you know, a bitter taste in my mouth at the end of this season, and I definitely want to, you know, be a part of, you know, that, be part of the part of turning this around. You know, and I think that we have the right people in place, and I think we have the right guys. It's, you know, it's just, you know, we have to execute. You know, we have to do all the little things, and I think we have a good idea of how we want to kind of right this ship. So, you know, I'm excited. I'm eager to kind of get back at it and really try and, you know, be a big piece of helping everyone, you know, turn this around.
I mean, your story of how you got here is awesome in terms of the coaching part of it, at least. I mean, you're a $15 an hour intern to now you're sitting in the managerial seat for the Chicago White Sox. And, you know, when you got the nod from Chris Getz, there wasn't a lot of talk about you even being in consideration. And then in the 40-plus games, here we are with Chris saying, like, look, like Grady has earned the right to be in the managerial discussion. What have you learned, not about the position, but what have you learned about yourself in the 40-plus games that you've been sitting in that chair?
you know, it's funny. I haven't really done a lot of self-reflecting, but I think that, you know, the big part of this is trying to work together. I think, you know, you have a big staff, you have, you know, your front office, you have your analytical group, you have your players, and how can I try to hear everything. I try to make everyone included in every part of their department, and you're trying to relay all that information to the players, and you're trying to get the players motivated and playing for each other. So, you know, I don't really know, you know, if there's a perfect way to do it or not. I think I just try to, you know, trust myself and trust my instincts and just be myself. You know, I didn't expect to be in this position or know really, you know, what it was going to look like once I started. You know, but I've just tried to have fun with it. I've tried to, you know, use every day as a learning experience and just try to grow, try to, you know, work together, be a team player. And, you know, I didn't really view it as me as a manager, as just, you know, I'm just another part of this team. And you know, how can I make an impact, a positive impact, you know, on these players and on the staff that, you know, can really be something that we look forward to every day, coming together and playing hard together and trying to put just a winning effort, you know, day in and day out.
Grady Sizemore, our guest, and inside the clubhouse for a few more minutes. Grady, maybe you are, unfortunately, the one that can relate to Luis Robert and his trials and tribulations more than anyone else, having been a great player in the league, having dealt with injuries, having seen it take away from some of the skills that you were able to display on the field afterwards, and now watching Luis go from arguably a top five player in the American League to a question mark as to what his abilities will allow him to do in the future. How much time have you spent talking to him and about maybe the comparative of your situations and how you can relate to him?
Yeah, you know, for me, I don't think it's a question mark. You know, I think, you know, it's easy to just to look at 1 year and say, oh, you know, now we have to question his who, where he ranks or his ability, and I just don't think that's the case. I think this is he's still a top five player in the league. He's still, you know, more talented than 99% of the players out there. You know, he just had a down year. I think part of it is injuries, and I think part of it is just not just injuries, but missing so much time, losing that timing in the box. You know, and I think when that happens, I think you kind of lose confidence a little bit. And I think even for the most confident player or the best player in the league, I think when you go through that stretch and you don't feel comfortable and you don't have your confidence, it's hard. I think that a lot of times, you know, talent isn't always the only factor. I think it can be just a little bit of just, you know, that trust in yourself and that trust in your ability that you lose or you... And when you start losing that, then all of a sudden mechanics start, you know, kind of going out the window because you're thinking about, you know, the wrong thing. So I think it's really just a matter of, you know, Luis kind of finishing this year healthy, you know, putting it behind him as far as just the numbers and the optics and just, you know, getting back to being himself and having the confidence and not trying to overthink it or do too much. I think, you know, when you're struggling and you're on a team that's struggling as a whole and you're not winning, you tend to just put a ton of pressure on yourself to do too much. And I think that's what kind of we saw this year. He just maybe lost his timing, you know, lost a little bit of that health and then, you know, put a lot of pressure to try to, you know, gain all that time that he missed, try to get that back in every at-bat, every game. And that's just, it's no way to play. And I think you just, you know, you put all that in front of you and it's just, you're not relaxed. You're trying to do too much every time you go out there. And I think that's what we saw with Luis this year.
The Birmingham Barons just won the Southern League title. Noah Schultz was named Double-A Pitcher of the Year. Brooks Baldwin, Edgar Caro, Drew Thorpe, all stars of the Southern League. Couple of those guys obviously up there with you guys. You talked about all the young players that you've had. I mean, it's the game has changed since you were a great all-star player for the Cleveland Indians. There wasn't as much development at the big leagues as there is right now in 2024. How have you been able to navigate that? Because, you know, guys would get September call-ups when you were playing, not learning how to, you know, pitch, learning how to take an 0-for-4 into the next day at the big league level. How has that navigational complex worked for you as a coach and a manager?
You know, it is a little different. I think you just what you see is guys are getting there a little quicker and probably without the reps that you know maybe I was accustomed to when I was. You know, when I was playing, I think you had a little bit more, you had a little bit more at bats and innings or pitched or whatever it was, however you want to look at it. So guys are kind of getting here faster and maybe not having the experience at the lower levels that you're used to when they get to the big leagues. So I think you just have to keep that in mind. You know, you're still, like you said, developing. They're still learning. You're still teaching. There's a lot more teaching going on because these guys are kind of getting, you know, thrust it up, you know, quicker. So you just got to keep that in mind. I think it's nothing that, you know, that we can't handle. I think it's just, you know, understanding that there's still a lot of teaching left and these guys still have a lot of just experience they need to gain at the big league level as opposed to, you know, getting that experience at the minor league level. So it's a little bit harder for them. You know, they're having to learn on the fly and learn in a tougher environment. But I think at the end, you know, you get a better product because they're getting that experience at a younger, you know, point in their career.
There is huge respect for you among the group, and nothing was more noticeable than that last night when you went out to talk to Crochet with a bases loaded situation and two out and his pitch count at a point where it's 60 and you had been taking him out since August in those situations. Can you talk a little bit about the Crochet situation and the knowledge that a pitcher, in most cases, doesn't seem to be a leader? In this case, Crochet seems to be one of the ultimate leaders on your team.
Yeah, you know, I think, and I've been on other teams where you could look at pitchers as leaders. You know, when I came up with Cleveland, you know, CC Sabathia was a young pitcher, but was definitely the leader in that clubhouse. And I look at Crochet in a very similar way. You know, a young player who has made an impact at an early point in his career, and had really taken over the clubhouse as that leader. You know, just by being himself. And I think, you know, just like CC, I think Garrett's done that. And And I think, you know, guys gravitate to him. You know, he's really done a great job, you know, kind of showing the other starters just how to go about their business and what it should look like. And I think that, you know, as the pitching staff as a whole, it all looks to him and lean on him. And then even the position players, you know, I think they all, he's one of the top leaders in that clubhouse, you know, regardless of whether he's pitching that night or not. I mean, he's really stepped up, and he's handled that tough situation like a pro. I think, you know, having going out there, you know, for 2 months and knowing that, you know, you really can't, you know, you're not even going to be in line to get a win, you know, it can only be, you know, no decision or a loss. It's not an easy place to pitch. And, you know, he's handled it well. He hasn't let it affect his work or his performance, or he hasn't let that frustration, you know, show on the mound or in the dugout when you know that he's probably feeling it, you know, being cut short every night. But I can't say enough about just, you know, who he is as a person and as a player and a teammate. He's done everything we've asked of him, and he's exceeded expectations and, you know, really finished the year in a strong spot, and excited for him, you know, for his future and for us next year.
We certainly appreciate you joining us, and I have one more kind of fun one. Maybe it might not be as fun for you as it is to ask the question, but I go back to 2005, and, you know, I think about that September stretch there that you guys were on. You were on such a heater, running down, trying to chase down the White Sox, and there was nobody that came to the plate more, Bruce, when the White Sox played that season that scared me more than Grady Sizemore. I mean, he just had a presence, and he was just so good. And, you know, the question, Grady, I have for you is, you guys were so close to getting in the postseason. We know how it ended for the White Sox. They won those six straight. They got in, and they never looked back. Do you ever think about, and I know the fly ball in Kansas City and got lost in the sun, I get all that, but do you ever think about how close that season might have been for the 2005 Cleveland Indians?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, we were a young team back then too, and started to play really good down the stretch in August, I think. You know, gained a lot of ground on those guys, and yeah, I you know, still me and Jerry still joke how that's the only reason why he hired me was because I dropped that ball, and that drop ball in Kansas City got you guys in the playoffs and got him in that World Series. So I feel like that was the only reason I got my foot in the door here, but I'll take it.
as a reporter every day with you and your team, again, I can't thank you enough for being the pro and for, you know, the growth that I've been able to watch you have as a coach and manager and leader of players. I wish you the best, hoping you're able to come back and be a manager or whatever you want to be next year. Ryan and I thank you so much for coming on today. Have a great day.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks, Ryan.
That's White Sox manager Grady Sizemore here on Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine, Ryan McGuffey. We're going to take a quick break and plenty more to discuss as we continue on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
You sit in traffic now, but later there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste, because you know all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yell.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
For some chin music.
Hey, Al, how about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
Because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, Inside the Clubhouse comes in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
I understand where they're coming from, why they're frustrated. Obviously, we've had a rough year. At one point or another, we were all baseball fans, and we had our team growing up, and we were pissed off when they were bad. So, like, we understand where they're coming from, but I thought it was a good crowd tonight, and they were behind us for a lot of it.
White Sox pitcher Jonathan Cannon talking about the White Sox fans booing on Tuesday night after a 3-2 comeback win, their first of the season. As Bruce and I talked about at the top of the show, the weird feeling that White Sox fans had this week in the final three home games, and then they get a sweep, and fans not knowing what they're rooting for. Are they rooting for wins? Are they rooting for the historic loss? A lot to unpack. Is it right? Is it wrong? And I think, Bruce, you could argue here on Chin Music that both sides have an argument here.
Well, you know, rooting against the home team is up to the individual fan. It's not conventional. It's not something you like to hear. But the paying customer, outside of being profane and coming down on somebody else that's in the audience as a paying fan, has a right to express themselves any way they want to. And I'm a big believer in that. I think White Sox fans are among the most honest in baseball when it comes to their team and dealing with the reality of it. I've always admired that. But the idea when it becomes personal and it's related to only one person, that being the owner of the White Sox, you can toss that around. I mean, Jerry has to share the responsibility for where this is at. I don't know if he got the credit for when the team was good or not. I doubt it, because it was more reflective of the general manager and the vice president of baseball operations when they were doing well in 2020 and 2021. They actually won a division in 2021. I think a lot of people try to forget about that and don't look at the current history of the Chicago White Sox. So from all of that, Ryan, I think that the fans are an important sounding board to what's going on with the organization. They must be listened to. At the same time, you have a responsibility to be ladies and gentlemen when you're out in public and letting your thoughts be heard.
I don't think fans have forgotten about the division title in 2021. What I think fans wanted more. They got a very light taste, and they had it pulled away from them. And when there was nothing, when 2020 it was followed up with a 2022 .500 season, very disappointing. And gosh, I think most Sox fans would just absolutely, kill for that type of season now, because it felt so lost then. I mean, they were in a pennant race in August in 2022. They didn't forget. But what's followed that? That's why you talked about the passion that White Sox fans have, and I get it. Like, that's why there's only one. That's why it's their worst crowd since 1999. It is a show me fan base. It always has been, and they will vocalize that in many ways. Whether it's booing a win, not showing up at all, being loud on social media. I do think at this particular time, like, the fans do deserve to voice their opinions maybe a little more than before, because they've gone through this double rebuild. Like, that's what it is. It's a double rebuild with two playoff wins, and one of which they weren't even allowed to attend because it was COVID. So there's a lot here, and I don't know how I feel about the fans booing on Tuesday night. I'm with you that you're entitled. You pay the money. You're entitled to do whatever you want. At the end of the day, I know why fans were going Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I know that there were friends of mine who said, "Hey, I'm going to go to a game because I want to be part of history, whether it's the part of history you want to be a part of or not." And then they're quote unquote treated to a sweep. So, look, it's not there's accountability at all levels here, top down. It's ownership, it's front office. I mean, Chris Getz did assemble the worst roster or the worst team in the history of the game. That is on the GM. There's other people below him as well. It's on Pedro Grifol was not a good fit for this team. He was a bad hire. And then they have a lot of young guys.
Who's a good hire for a team that lost 101 and was going to destined to lose 100 a couple more years in a row?
Bruce, Pedro Grifol was not brought in here to lose 100 games.
Didn't ask you that. I said, who's going to be a good hire for that?
For last year's season?
For knowing that you're going to lose 100 games the following year and more
but they
than
didn't
likely.
Think they were losing 100 games when they
hired
him.
Oh, yes, they did. Yes, they did.
Then they lied.
No, not Grifol. No, not when they hired him, but certainly when they brought him back this year.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. He was a lame duck. He was a sitting duck at that point. Right. I'm just saying he was a bad hire in 2023.
Moving forward, who's a good hire for a team that's more like a expansion team than a rebuild, okay? Let's call it what it properly is.
Absolutely.
And back in May, when I saw the injuries to the hitters on the team, and I saw the type of ball they were only going to be able to play, I said, this team's going to lose 110 games. I was wrong. You know, I was wrong about that. It was more than that. But the reality of the fact that they didn't have enough position players. Ryan, this team, I believe, is setting a record for the fewest runs scored in a season by a major league team in history. I think that that story has been washed away with the record. But the idea that they're averaging 3.1 runs per game in the major leagues is more astonishing to me than the record. And maybe the record is certainly indicative of the fact that you can't score a run, you can't win. But to me, what I want to know moving forward is, how do you get better position players? How do you get a more representative lineup to go out there and support some of this good young pitching that you're obviously bringing along right now?
Well, amen. Absolutely, because it's not coming via the draft. You have a 10th pick in the draft after this season. You have to draft better. You have to scout better. To your point about the offense, 494 runs. They need to score 6 runs the next 2 days, and they're going against Tarik Skubal today. I don't know if they get 6 runs, Bruce. They might not score 500 runs this season. To get to 29th, they're 30th, obviously, to get to 29th, the Tampa Bay Rays have 102 more runs than the Chicago White Sox.
Well, they're going to have really good offensive outputs the next 2 days.
I mean, you're talking about every team in baseball scoring 600 when you're not scoring 500. So how do they get more bats? They have to trade from the surplus.
To me, let's focus on how they can get better. If you trade Crochet, if you trade Robert, you got to bring in some position players that can play ball, okay?
100%.
You can't be concerned necessarily that you have them for 6 years, you know, which is the rule of thumb about, let's trade for organization X's 3 top position players. They're number 2, 4, and 12 guy in their organization. That's not going to be good enough. You're going to have to go a little deeper than that and say, let's get their second baseman, who's in the second year of his contract, he's got to be a part of the Crochet deal. Let's get players off of the big league team to give us a jump start over the next 3 or 4 years so that we're not planning 6 years down the line. We're actually planning 2 or 3 years down the line to be a better team. Kansas City, Ryan, won 56 games last year, okay? Yep. They've won 85 this year. It's an improvement of 29 games, okay? If the White Sox do that, they'll have 92 losses next year, okay? 70 and 92, okay? That'll be a big year for the Chicago White Sox. It'll be huge improvement. Will it be enough for White Sox fans to come out and enjoy themselves and have a better experience watching their team, watching it at home on TV, listening to it on the radio? I can't speak for them. We'll see, but that would be my goal at this point if I'm Chris Getz and his people in the offseason looking to try to improve this team.
312-644-6767 is our phone number. And I agree, Bruce. You have to get offensive players. And I'm not talking about just players, just the guys to check the box to say, like you said, 2, 4, and 6 top prospects. You need some kind of stud in the middle of that lineup. Where's that coming from? Right now, it's not from within. So where you... How do White Sox fans watch the playoffs? How do Cub fans watch the playoffs? You watch the failures of teams that are expected to win the World Series. That's what I would say. If the Dodgers fail, if the Baltimore Orioles fail, and I'm talking about going deep into the postseason, not flopping in the first round. If the Orioles flop again, they are going to be desperate, or they should be. And that's an organization that has surplus of hitters, and they don't have pitching. You know, the Dodgers have a $700 million player. They have maybe arguably the top 3 players in baseball in their lineup. But if they come up short, they are going to be seeking more. They may fire their manager. The New York Yankees, same deal. There's no excuses in some of these towns. That's how Sox fans, that's how Cub fans should watch the playoffs. Desperation. Teams that falter. Go pluck. Go, hey, here's our golden nugget. Here we have Garrett Crochet. We have 1 year of Luis Robert. Can you package him? Certainly Garrett Crochet is your golden apple. There's no way you can mess that trade up. I do think, and I know Crochet spoke about the possibility of wanting an extension earlier this week. I just don't see it. I don't see how this matches up with this current team when you have so much need and you're historically bad on the field and at the plate that you actually have something that lines up for 30 other for 29 other clubs. And everyone's a player. You're not looking at three or four teams at the trade deadline. You actually can evaluate everybody here and say, what is the best package? Garrett Crochet did finish strong. He made every start, albeit four. He didn't pitch more than four innings the second half. But the way he looked the last two starts against San Diego and against Detroit last night with 14 strikeouts in 8 innings, he leads Major League Baseball in strikeouts per 9 innings. I think he's put a resume together, Bruce, that if I'm a team going forward, I know what I'm getting in Garrett Crochet, and I'm willing to give you pieces to prove that.
There's a guy in Bridgeport that's driving off the road right now going, we got to keep the best pitcher in baseball, Ryan. He's a leader on our team. He's everything White Sox fans love about the team, you know. He's yep. all South Side, right? Why would you trade our guy? But I have a hard time arguing with you about the timing of it and the reality of where they're at and where they have to go. As you said, and you put it quite well, you can't mess that trade up, okay? You cannot. It looks like they got the Dylan Cease trade right. There's two really good players that are coming along in that deal. You really have to do the same thing with Crochet. You got to get three really good players, and that is going to be the charge for Chris Getz. If there's anything that keeps Chris Getz up at night, it is the fact that he has to trade one of the best young pitchers in the game, and he's got to get it right. How does he do that? How does he go to the general manager's meetings in November, the winter meetings in December, and represent himself and the White Sox to the point of getting the best players possible for Crochet and feeling good about it?
Because in his back pocket, he has the double-A pitcher of the year, Noah Schultz, and a stud prospect in Hake. They have the number one and two left-handed pitching prospects in Major League Baseball. Not in the system, not in the American League, in all of Major League Baseball. So he can sleep at night knowing that he's got younger, quote-unquote, Garrett Crochets coming up the pipeline as soon as next year.
I don't know. They're one hang nail away from that being that. You know, you've got a lot of proof in Crochet, and there's no better proof for me, Ryan, than being out there with baseball scouts all year long and their general managers putting them on Crochet starting these last 2 months and say, stay with him the rest of the year. We want thorough reports on everything about him. We want to know more than we see on video. We want to know what type of guy he is. We know what type of leader he is, what the coaches on that team think of him as far as his ability to work, understand, be able to get an idea about him. That's how serious. There's four or five teams that have been doing this with Crochet for the last 2 months of the season.
He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. NBC Sports Chicago ends a 20-year run on Sunday and Monday with some programming, and they will shut down as the new CHSN network begins with the three teams. We will talk about that on the other side of a break. This is Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Remember, before Chicago takes on LA, tune in tomorrow morning from 9 to noon for the Your Local Ford Dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score, presented by Aurelio's and Sony Pictures Wonderverse Chicago. Join Molly Olin-Kruch and Patrick Manley as they'll get you set for the game, and it can all be heard on The Score and the Odyssey app. I'm Ryan McGuffey. He's Bruce Levine, wrapping things up here on Inside the Clubhouse. And Bruce, after tomorrow's White Sox game, which will be the final broadcast on NBC Sports Chicago, after a 20-year run, we will go dark. There will be a bunch of special programming for the next 30 hours after the game, with parades and post-game shows and some of the first shows that were ever on the network. And I just wanted to take a few minutes to, you know, tip the cap to all the people the last two decades that got that network on and off the air, and all the like, people like me and all the people, the friends and that are now family. That it's been a very emotional month, a very emotional week. Chuck Garfine and I taped our last White Sox Talk podcast yesterday. That has dropped, and it's the definition of emotion, I think, on that. So you were part of our network, Bruce, on the early going. I think I rode in the back seat of one of the NBC Sports Chicago's from the 2005 All-Star Game, knee to knee with Bruce Levine. There's no other place I'd rather
be.
Yeah.
And your comment was, wow, Bruce Levine riding B blank, blank, blank. Who'd have thunk it? You know, and we sat there coming back from the Detroit and coming back from Detroit after the White Sox, or was it Cleveland coming back from Cleveland?
It was Detroit.
It was Detroit, yeah, they clinched there. And that was that was some great times, things you'll never forget. And, a lot of great friends over at NBC Sports Chicago like you. And, you know, we feel for everybody. Some of the people will be joining the new network. Some will not. They'll go on to greener pastures, hopefully. But all very dedicated, hardworking people over the last 20 years. And it's a family that's breaking up. I imagine... You know, if you want to take the time out to mention names, there's probably just too many for you to mention at this point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it all goes back to Jim Corno. Jim Corno was the original visionary of Comcast Sportsnet when we launched October 1st of 2004. And it was a family business. And over the time, it changed names to CSN and NBC Sports Chicago once we became merged with the Peacock. And there's just so many people, behind the scenes that are now lifelong, like I said, family. That's the word. You spend more time, and Bruce, you know this, you spend more time with the people in this grind of a job. It's not a job. We've gotten to do so many crazy things and so many great things and great stories. And they're just, it's just been, it's been a hell of a ride, a lot of reflection the last 3 or 4 weeks. Like I said, very emotional. And tomorrow when we cap things off, there'll be a toast in game. There'll be a toast in the post game show. It's a celebration, even though that not everyone's going on. From what I do believe this, the last 20 years were just an unforgettable, and I don't think we'll ever see before again. That type of run where you had a World Series from the White Sox, which had not been done for 88 years. You had a World Series from the Cubs that had not been done for 108 years. Three Stanley Cup titles. The Bears went to a Super Bowl. Derrick Rose won an MVP. And all of that stuff was on NBC Sports Chicago. So that's what we're fading to black on. And it's been a memorable run, a memorable ride. I appreciate you guys giving me a few minutes to talk about it because it's certainly been dear to my heart.
Absolutely. So. And one thing you will know, even though the baseball season is ending, Ryan and I will be with you every Saturday, 9 to 11, talking Chicago and national baseball. So make it appointment radio to catch up with us again next week at 9 o'clock. And after that, people can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine on our website, 670thescore.com. We have people to thank as well, Ryan.
Alex Kuhn. We have Grady Sizemore and Pete Crow Armstrong. We thank them for being guests. And we thank all of you for listening, for the calls. And as Bruce said, now the fun begins. Bruce and I get to put together the puzzle of rebuilding the White Sox and fixing the Chicago Cubs. And it starts next Saturday on Inside the Clubhouse here on 670 The Score.